Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings.com. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk with you. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to participate that way for the next 1 hour talking Giants football with you. Obviously, the Giants coming off a heartbreaking loss to the Dallas Cowboys, 27-26. And of course, I'm sure I know what a lot of people want to talk about, what happened in the final 2 minutes of that contest, or rather, it was more like 3 minutes of that contest. So we'll get to that first. We heard from both Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning yesterday on conference call. So we have from the guys themselves what happened. We'll go through that. Then anything else in the game we could talk about as well. All right, Lance, let's get right to it. We heard from Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning, and I think to summarize what happened at the end of the game is fairly simple. One, I think the most important thing to note is that both Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning have stepped forward. They've taken the blame for the mistakes that they made. They know in retrospect that they made errors, they made mistakes. And I think what strikes me is that these are the two guys that in the past are always so sharp in these situations. But as a lot of players have said this morning, that not every player and coach bats 1,000 in these tough spots. And even the smallest mistake can end up costing you a game. And both Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin know they screwed up. They know they made mistakes. And they came out yesterday and admitted as much after taking a look at it for 24 hours.
They did. Everybody owned it essentially across the board, John. Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning. And they even echoed those sentiments following the game in the postgame pressers back on Sunday. It wasn't as if this was the first time during the conference calls. They made that very clear immediately following the game. So there's not anything up in the air with respect to that. Miscues, mental lapses. I mean, there's a variety of ways that you could describe what played out in the final few minutes. Eli Manning mentioned the fact that he thought the Dallas Cowboys had an additional timeout, and there was some confusion even to the viewer, John, considering, you know, it's so convoluted, this rule book, but you have to understand, under 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the clock is going to stop on all penalties, whether they are accepted or declined.
Correct.
That's the key there. Now, the penalty was declined. DeMarcus Lawrence went offsides, but it doesn't matter because regardless of whether it's accepted or declined, penalty is called under 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, clock stops, it then starts up again at the snap.
And then previously, the Cowboys did in fact call timeout, but then the referee gave them that timeout back.
Correct.
After a post-possession, and this is why I thought that timeout shouldn't have been given back, a post-possession personal foul penalty, which would have stopped the clock anyway, so they gave Jason Garrett back that timeout, which added to the confusion. The only other piece of information yesterday that was new that we should touch on is after the game, Rashad Jennings, talking to Dan Graziano of ESPN New York, said that, you know, I've never been asked before to not try and score. And it was later revealed yesterday that Eli Manning, because of that confusion with the number of timeouts the Cowboys had remaining, he thought they only had one when they in fact had two, which obviously changes the formula. He told Rashad Jennings to try not to score, to try to leak more of that clock away. Now, from watching the two plays, Lance, and by the way, that did not come from the sideline, that came from Eli.
Correct.
And both Eli and coach have said that there should have been better communication between them to make sure everyone was on the same page with the number of timeouts. We should point that out as well. But to me, it still looked like Rashad Jennings was running hard. I didn't see him give up on either one of those two plays, to be honest with you. And Eli made that point yesterday, that it didn't seem like that he wasn't trying. It seemed like he went to the hole fairly hard, and the Cowboys just made plays before the goal line. So just a big mess. Nothing went well. Nothing went right. But now they have to come back, recover, and try to get ready for Atlanta.
To me, the best way to summarize this situation, John, is you have experienced individuals who've seen a lot of football who just overthinked everything. That's what it came down to, it seemed, as if, you know, the managing of the time and everything, you get so caught up in the mathematical equations and so forth, and obviously the goal is you want to get in the end zone. Sometimes there's too much thinking that goes into the process, and unfortunately it came back to haunt them.
And I was watching listening to Bob Pappas' show this morning on Sirius NFL Radio, and obviously that was still a matter of conversation, and the one question that they kept getting was, well, why did this happen? Can you explain how you can make this type of mistake? And Lance and I will give you the same question that Bob gave his callers this morning on Sirius, is that there isn't a reason. If there was a reason, they wouldn't have made the mistake. The mistake is the mistake, and they screwed up, and they've admitted it, and that's just the bottom line. You make sure it doesn't happen again. You make sure there's better communication. You make different decisions, so you get better clock management, And that's the bottom line. There is no reason. There's no explanation. The explanation is that they were wrong and they screwed up. And they said that. So as we move forward here, that's what happened at the end of the game. Obviously, it did help cost the Giants to win. But I also want to bring something else in that respect, Lance, is that all this, while it would still be talked about and still be an error and still be a mistake, it would be more like a footnote to a great Giants Week 1 victory if the defense would have done a better job stopping the Cowboys from not just scoring, but getting into the end zone with less than 2 minutes to play and no timeouts. Six plays, 70 yards on a drive in less than 90 seconds.
Two possessions in which they went six plays, 70-plus yards. Let's not forget about the previous touchdown in which Jason Witten got into the end zone to pull them within three. And you know, I agree with you, John. I think when you look at this game and you look at what the media has been doing with this game, it's easy to pinpoint the third and goal possession, the decision of whether to throw, whether to run, Eli Manning not taking the sack. But you know, let's not lose sight of the other facets of this game and the other facets of this football team. And the defense had an opportunity to, at worst, hold them to a field goal. And then all of a sudden, well, not obviously the Cowboys are going, I should stand corrected here. They're not going to settle for a field goal because obviously they were down by six at that point.
No, on the first drive,
on the previous drive,
right.
Correct.
Yes.
I mean, that was, but in terms of the final drive, they can move down the field, John. The Cowboys, nobody's saying that you have to hold them at the 30 or the 40-yard line. You just obviously can't keep them. You got to prevent them from getting into the end zone. And then obviously the narrative changes. So, you know, I think that you can see things from the defensive side in this game. You can see things from the offensive side in this game. And they all add up. And that opened the door for obviously the Cowboys to strike when it was all said and done. But there was still time. There were still opportunities for the defense to make stops to prevent Jason Witten and company from getting into that end zone.
Yeah, and you saw things like missed tackles, a lot of run after the catch, and frankly, you didn't see Tony Romo throw the ball more than 10 or 15 yards down the field more than two, three times in this game. Everything was catch the ball short, catch it in motion, and get run after the catch, and the Giants too often underneath had trouble tackling the Cowboys players as soon as they caught the football, especially the running backs. We saw Randall with a play like that. We saw McFadden with a play like that. And obviously Lance Dunbar with a number of plays like that where they would catch the ball and then that big run after the catch.
Well, Dunbar was actually the leading receiver for the Cowboys. He had eight catches for 70 yards. And you mentioned that the Cowboys didn't have a lot of big plays. The numbers tell it all, John. They only had three plays of 20-plus yards. That includes running plays and passing plays. Everything was dumping it off, going for the underneath routes, as you mentioned. They basically took what the Giants defense gave them. We were surprised by that. At least I was, John. I thought they were going to test this secondary. I thought Romo was going to take his fair share of shots and chances down the field. Instead, he said, hey, you know what? If they're going to give us some opportunities in the flat in the middle of the field, we'll dump it off. We'll see what the defense gives us. And that's exactly what played out on Sunday.
I think what we're seeing, and I think we saw this in the preseason too, but we were wondering, well, is this just preseason football? Is this going to be what this defense is like in the regular season? But I think this defense is starting to show that it might try to be one of those bend but don't break defenses. Don't give up the big play. Make them work their way down the field slowly. You know, maybe that'll, you know, all those extra plays by the opposing team, maybe a turnover here or there. The Giants got three takeaways in that game, and you try to hold them to field goals. That worked in the first half. It worked in the third quarter, keeping the Cowboys out of the end zone. But in the fourth quarter, it didn't. And the Cowboys got those two touchdowns. Those end up being the difference.
That was certainly the difference. I mean, the fact that they scored in what to me seemed like the blink of an eye. We're talking about a pair of drives, John, that took under 2 minutes for the Cowboys to get into the end zone. And that, to me, was really the big killer when you look at this game. Other than, obviously, everybody focusing on that one possession down on the offensive side, if you get that touchdown, clearly it gives you a little bit room for comfort. But still, you still have an opportunity to keep the Cowboys out of the end zone, and that could change the course of this game.
And there are so many other facets of this game, folks. Lance and I can sit here at 12:30 and talk about all the different things that happened. But him and Fiegels did that yesterday, and we got a full bank of calls. So whatever you guys want to talk about regarding the game, please give us a call. Anything you want to discuss, we're here. From the offense, the defense, you know, but so many different aspects in this game. Wanayunga being the middle linebacker, Preston Parker's issues with his hands. We can talk about the offensive line, who I think did a pretty good job protecting Eli Eric Flowers' ankle injury. Something to keep an eye on this week. The defensive line, I thought they did a pretty good job against the run. Would like a little bit of better pass rush. The corners, I thought, did a pretty good job. Landon Collins made a couple plays in this game. So
Jermaine McBride was
Jermaine
active
McBride
too.
Was actually did a pretty darn good job on Cole Beasley. That's exactly right. Maybe you want a little bit more out of Ruben Randall with all the single coverage. Should they have tried to get the ball to Beckham more? A million different things to talk about. 201-939-4513. Let's get right to it, Lance.
Yeah.
But first, I want to remind fans that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York, all one word, to claim your free entry today. Joe in Pennsylvania, you lead us off today. Joseph, how are you?
Fine, guys. Did you guys get any sleep the last couple nights?
Lance did, but I was
I don't know about that.
But I was on that plane that landed at 7 a.m. in Newark Airport on Monday morning, so I got a handful of hours during the day yesterday, and I got a decent night's sleep last night. So I'm much better today than I was yesterday. As Lance can attest to, he came to see me after the show yesterday. I was asleep in my chair in my office.
Indeed. That's why I went. I left, and I didn't have anything else to add to that.
Well, I just said I'm still – I'm Sunday night into Monday, no sleep, but it's still shock over that game. You know what I mean? Really, that's a heartbreaker. You go back to Lombardi used to say, he wrote this book, there's God, there's your family, and there's the Green Bay Packers. Well, I feel there's God, there's my family, and there's
the
New York
Meadows.
Giants.
Okay.
So, looking at this game and that, the main thing is, They did blow it, that's for sure. But the main thing is they're opening up to it. And I hope they sit down with the team and everything else like that. Eli Coughlin, you know, the coordinator, you know what I mean? Because definitely time management could have won that game without a doubt.
Hey, look, real quick, here's the thing, and I'll let you finish. You know, I would like to think that both Eli and Tom have built some level of equity here with the fans and the media in New York. I mean, these guys have been here doing it now, both of them, for more than 10 seasons, and you've really rarely, if ever, seen something like this happen at the end of the game. So I would like to think people understand that, look, it's a one-time mistake. You move on. You correct it. It's not like this is a pattern of behavior that's been going on for a decade.
I agree. The only thing I have, how can everybody go brain dead at the same time? That's what I find it hard. I remember in that game they wanted Bradshaw not to score, but we would have been only up by less than a touchdown. But this time here we would have been up by two. That's what's really hurt me. You can go in after a hard-fought game, you miss assignments or this or that, or you're all bruised up. You go into the tub and you got to soak your bruises and everything. But now this time here where they got to get together and soak their heads. They played a hell of a game, and that's the main thing here. We got to do it mentally this time to get close. I had some sleep the other day there last night because the Eagles lost, but I watched the Falcons, and they're going to be more. Their offense is more. Their receivers and running back and a quarterback, they are going to be more of a test. Their offensive line is nowhere near Dallas's.
Correct.
But their their receivers and that are very going to be
tough. They've got a new offense, Joe. Kyle Shanahan is now the offensive coordinator. He wasn't there last season. They also have a new head coach in Dan Quinn who has brought a new defensive philosophy. So, you know, if you're looking back at the previous meeting between the Giants and the Falcons,
throw
I would
it
say
out.
Don't put much stock in that because to me this is a completely different team, even though some of the personnel is familiar to Giants fans.
And Joe, the Falcons' offense was never the issue. We know Matt Ryan's really good. We know Julio Jones can play. We know Roddy White, though older now, is still a very good, reliable possession receiver. You're right, they got the two young running backs now who I thought were pretty impressive last night. But to me, the difference, Joe, for the Falcons is the defense. And even though you look at, you know, no names jump off the paper, when you look at their depth chart on defense, you could tell they're playing a
aggressive
brand of football on defense.
Right.
And they seem to be very well coached. So I think next week is going to be a bigger challenge on people
think. This is where we're mirroring each other. The Giants are in the same position with their offensive line coming together with their
receivers
and running back.
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels
coming together. But
it's a good
positive
point
on this thing, the specialty teams were together and we were disciplined, and hopefully we just stay together and you know what I mean? We got to move on. We face what we screwed up at it. We admitted it, and let's go Giants. So thanks for listening to me.
All right, Joe. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
201-939-4513. Go through a couple tweets here really quick before we get to our next call. Our man Mike Farmer, and I love Mike, but he's wrong on this one. I hope everyone realizes Eli is just being what he always has been, a good leader and teammate. We all know who told Eli not to score. Eli is doing this out of respect for Tom Coughlin. No way do I believe that decision didn't come from higher up. Mike, you're our guy. We love you. But
well, speak for yourself.
Tom, no, that's a fair point. Mike, we tolerate you. How about that? But
more suitable. I like that. That's improvement.
But Mike, here's the thing. Tom Coughlin admitted he made a mistake on the play call. If he admitted he made a mistake on that, why wouldn't he go out and admit the mistake there? And the reason you know that Tom wouldn't have told Eli and Rashad not to score, then why would he pass the ball on third down? If all he was interested in doing is running out the clock and not trying to score, the pass on third down makes absolutely no sense. It's like he changed in the middle of the series what his objective was. If he was trying to score with a pass on third down, he was obviously trying to score on first and second down as well. You know, you wouldn't try not to score and then just, you know, forget the clock when before was your entire thing. So I think that's where you run into the issue there, where you know that, you know, as Tom said after the game, my goal is there to score the 7 points. I want to score the seven. Does that give
he said he wanted the 10-point lead.
Yes,
he
came out and said that. That gives you the two-possession lead. And even if you score on that first down, you're still looking at the Cowboys having to put together a touchdown drive, get an onside kick, and then get a field goal on top of that, which is very, very difficult.
Well, nobody's going to argue with that philosophy that Tom Coughlin threw out, John, and we were talking off the air. The bottom line is, if you have a two-possession lead, then the number of minutes on the clock, the number of seconds on the clock is somewhat irrelevant because it's the security blanket to protect yourself. Even if Dallas goes down the field and scores, you still now have to force them to try to get the ball back and score again.
Right.
So it changes the entire dynamics of this contest. It's a no-brainer what Tom Coughlin said. You want that 10-point
lead. And trust me, Tom would not tell Eli to go jump on a sword for him. If anything, he often takes the blame for stuff that's not his fault, Tom. He wants to take the pressure off of his players and put it on himself to help his team. So
he doesn't deflect.
No,
he's not that type of guy.
He will step up and he will take the bullets for things that aren't his fault and certainly for all the things that are. 201-939-4513. Someone brought up one other quick play. I don't remember the tweeter, but the bad pass interference call on Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. I agree. I thought that was a fairly soft penalty.
I agree.
You saw the hand on his back, but I don't think there was a pull. Nothing that impeded Williams' progress. So I thought that was a
it was very subtle. I think that's the best way to describe what transpired.
Not a lot of contact. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Drew in Virginia. Drew is up next. What's going on, Drew?
Hey, guys. How you doing, Lance, John? How you guys
doing? Well, Drew.
Long time no speak, Drew.
What's happening with you?
Yeah, okay. I'm doing pretty good, man. You know, it's football season's back in. You know, I typically don't get caught up in the draft and the preseason and all that other stuff because it's all speculation.
Well, you don't beat around the bush here. You just go right to the point. There we go. So, I mean, I don't blame you, Drew. Why should you waste your time with minutia when you can get right to the season?
So let's get to it, Drew. What do you got?
Well, no, I certainly have had some opinions, but, you know, hey, man, first and foremost, man, I'm going to go on a mini rant, but I'm going to keep it short. But let me just say this. After 2 days, I've calmed down a little bit.
I hope so.
But yeah, I am completely and utterly seething about this loss. Now, I want to say that the Giants played very well. In fact, I don't think a lot of our fans, and I'll admit probably me, thought that the Giants was going to win this game anyway. But not only were they in it, they definitely had a chance to win it. And so I have to give kudos to the team and the defense, for the effort. That said, and you know I love Eli, but I tell you right now, his decision-making and that right there just really, really murdered me. And that's what really had me extremely upset. And I have to say that I have to go back to the Philadelphia game a couple of years ago where Eli's decision-making cost us a divisional win. Eli's a veteran quarterback. We're not talking about a rookie here. We're not talking about a 3 or 4 year quarterback. We're talking about a Super Bowl winning quarterback. You would think he would have more wherewithal about what's going on. I know things happen and this and that, but come on, man, you got to be aware of the situation. And regardless of whether Dallas had a timeout or not, you milk the clock and make them use those timeouts.
Drew, trust me. Eli understands, and this is something that they go over a lot. In that situation, you cannot throw an incomplete pass. You have to take the sack. He knows it was a big mistake. He admitted it was a big mistake, and he knows it can't happen again. Everything you're saying, I think Eli would parrot and say, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so, you know, but I just wanted to get that off my shoulder because it's therapy. because, you know, and the other thing, though, man, is because, you know, I mean, you know, we lost the game and everybody admitted they made mistakes and, okay, yeah, that's a no-brainer. We see that. But, I mean, you know, first and foremost, this is a divisional loss. This is hardening, okay?
Yep.
So it makes it even more worse because these things can come back to haunt you. And I just hope and pray this one particular game does not come back to hurt us, especially of it being a divisional a game. That's my biggest fear out of all of that. You know, we can get over it. Yeah, they made mistakes and this and that. But a divisional loss like that is just – That can be deadly.
Sure, we hear you. Luckily, it's the first division game, and the team will have some time to recover from it. And they have five more division games to go. You go 4-1 in those games, they'll be in great shape.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, you know. And I think we all know this because it's the division itself. I don't see us going 5-1 to 4-1, but you know.
I hear you
because it's a divisional game. Is what I'm saying.
All right, what else you got, Joe? Real quick.
We all know these games is going to be tough. Hey, man, so at any rate, yeah, I've got that off my chest. JPP, man,
what a mess, guys.
I think, you know, I mean, we need him and we miss him and everything, man, but I think we just need to cut our losses with that.
Well, Drew, you know, we'll see what happens, and thanks a lot for the call. And, hey, look, if JPP can come back and help this team rush the passer and get to the quarterback in the middle of the year, trust me, Giant fans would love to have him back. They'd love to have him back.
Absolutely.
But we'll see how he is.
Provide perhaps a surge, but I think at this point, like the philosophy has been all preseason long and throughout training camp, John, is you got to worry and focus on the players that are here right now. And that's exactly what Steve Spagnuolo and company are working with. I know a lot of people have been focusing on the pass rush, specifically on those last drives. I still stand by the fact that, you know, Tony Romo was getting the ball. He was getting rid of that extremely quickly. I mean, if you watch every single play on that series, and I know a lot of people are focusing on, John, the play where the bad snap occurred. Still, if you count the amount of seconds, he picks it up automatically and then all of a sudden gets rid of the ball to Jason Witten.
There were not a lot of seven-step drops
very
in that
few
game.
Seconds.
That being said, you still would have liked to see some more pass pressure from
Absolutely.
The Giants. But you're right. He was getting rid of the ball extremely. Just look at the length of the passes. I mean, if you're going to throw the ball short to Jason Witten, to the three running backs, even Cole Beasley out of the slot, those aren't deep drops. I mean, those are things where he's going to take three steps or five steps, you know, set his back foot and fire the ball out of there. You know, it wasn't like the end of the game in 2014 where he's sitting back there patting the ball, looking in, you know, a billion different directions before he releases the pass.
I think that's a nice comparison there in terms of the difference of that drive that you're referring to at MetLife Stadium where they had about 3 minutes left on the clock. And Romo, he was pushing the football down the field, and they were running it with DeMarco Murray. This was just one dump off after another. And there was one play, and I don't remember the exact play, where the pocket seemed to collapse, John, and it looked like the Giants got some pressure.
Romo stepped
right through it. So that's an example of there was pressure.
That was errors on that play that came around.
Correct.
The edge.
But then Romo was anticipating it moving up and then getting rid of the football. So I think it's a little misleading when you look at that drive and you say the Giants weren't getting any pressure. They were. It's just the Cowboys did a great job of adapting and reacting to it on the fly.
201-939-4513. I'm going to try to get through these calls quick today, folks. So we got a lot of people trying to get in. I want to get everybody on the air as soon as possible and get through all the calls. Go to Dan in Pennsylvania next. Dan, what's up?
Yeah, hey, fellas, how you doing?
Hi, Dan.
Doing well, Dan. What do you got?
Great. Well, you know, like you said, John, this fiasco, I mean, it's not going to go away quickly. I know we got to move on. And,
hey, better.
Know,
hey, no, Dan, hold on. This better go away quick. You're playing a game in 6 days. So, I mean,
you don't have time. You don't have time to let it linger.
I feel they're going to take their frustrations out on everything. And I know Atlanta's no joke, but I think we're going to, you know, use that to help us even, you know, play harder and play stronger. So, but let me tell you guys real quick. I won't get into it too much, and then you guys can tell me what you think. The fact that, I mean, well, you guys are like therapy for us, guys. You hear the pain in the callers' voices?
I do.
I mean, we are hurting, guys. And this is like, this kind of loss takes a couple of days to get over. You know, like the Deshaun Jackson game or the game back in, like, I'm in my 50s. I've seen a lot of excruciating, like, this.
Flipper Anderson.
Collapse
Flipper
in
Anderson.
The playoffs.
Yep. Flipper.
But this one, the first time Eli snapped the ball during that last drive, the first time he snapped the ball when there's like 14, 15 seconds still on the clock. I know the reasoning. I've listened to everything, you know, and they said their whole routine and blah, blah, blah. They don't want to keep the guys down in the stance too long. They're going to jump. But The first time that happened, it should have been addressed and made sure it didn't happen again. It happened a couple of times.
Well, Dan, real quick on that. I'm not sure anyone else has brought this up, and I was thinking about this yesterday. I talked to a couple of people about it. In that situation, too, think of it this way. Let's say in that particular drive, you don't get all the way to the goal line. Let's say you end up kicking a 39 or 45-yard field goal or something like that, and you go up by six. In that situation, you're also worrying about maybe, in case the Cowboys do come back and score, having time yourself to answer and getting a last-second field goal to end the game. So that early in that drive, I'm not sure that running out the clock that early is – it's still a big priority. Don't get me wrong. But there might be a situation right there where you need some extra time at the end in case – because, you know, what happens? If the Cowboys score there, they take the 27-26 lead. It would have been nice to have 35 seconds on the clock for Eli to try to throw a couple passes to kick a field goal, right?
Well, and right, Dan,
John,
Dan the,
that's where the therapy's coming in. Well, like, you're helping me here.
The other thing that I would add, you know, and you referred to the fact that, you know, it's part of their routine when Eli Manning snaps the football. You know, if the goal at the end of the day is to get into the end zone, why should you now tweak your system, your scheme, just because you're worried about the clock? The clock can't dictate your decision making. If you're confident in your offensive scheme, the goal is to get in the end zone. If you start overthinking things, this is when all of a sudden you open the door for perhaps a mental lapse.
Yeah, and Dan, you know, and if that would have happened when there was, you know, 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go, and you're obviously trying to run time off the clock because the Cowboys are burning their timeouts, and, you know, you see that the end of the game's coming and you're trying to run clock, then yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. But with 5 minutes or so to go, I think it's a little bit early to worry about 7 or 8 seconds to take yourself out of your rhythm. What else you got, Dan?
Yeah, you're right. And we were moving the ball, so that's the last thing you want to worry about.
They were running the ball effectively, too, on that drive, yeah.
Okay, one last thing. The one thing I can't get through, because you want to figure things out. You don't want to understand what happened if the defense collapsed or this collapsed or something. The one thing I can't get past, and you guys got to help me with this, is the fact that, again, why would Eli say don't score? Because if you go up, I don't care if there's 2 minutes left in the game. If you score, you're up by two scores, and it's impossible unless we fumble the kickoff or something and they run it back after scoring real quick. You know what I mean? How could he say not to score? We would have been up by two scores. I just can't get past that.
Well, Dan, and John and I were discussing that in great detail, and I'm just putting myself in the mind of Eli Manning. We can't necessarily get into exactly what he was thinking, but I believe that if he thinks the Cowboys just have one timeout, John, you know, he's thinking we could essentially take this clock down
till about 13, 15 seconds.
So, Dan, that's why I think he's saying perhaps in his head, don't score, because if the Cowboys only have one timeout, then we're leaving them with essentially nothing to work with. Tony Romo would have to make a miracle happen if they even wanted to get near the end zone.
Right.
So I think that perhaps is what his rationale is under those circumstances.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate it, man.
All right, Dan. All right. Thanks for waiting.
And just real quick, and I was going to say this earlier, I'm not sure if I've had a chance to or not, but most times it's never a bad thing to score a touchdown in this league. There are very few instances where you say, you know what, us scoring a touchdown there was a big mistake.
No, I don't think anybody
it's
would
rare
say
that happens, but here's one of the times where there is an exception. You know, and it happened in the Super Bowl back in 2011 when Ahmad Bradshaw tried to stop before the goal line. And it's exactly what you were just talking about, Lance. You would rather – and again, the differences aren't big. But I think you have a better chance to win the game if you give Dallas the ball back up six with like 13 seconds to go than you do if you give the Dallas the ball back up 10 with a minute 55 to go and a timeout left. So if the Giants score on that first play, for example, you know, you're kicking off, Dallas gets the ball to like maybe 1:48 after the kick. They have a timeout. Now, they have to get a touchdown, onside kick, and a field goal now to tie the game.
That's a lot to ask for them to do.
Which is really, really difficult. But getting the ball back, but having Dallas get the ball back, let's say you go for it on fourth down. Let's say Dallas has the ball on their own 1 yard line with 13 seconds. I think that's even harder than having to do the score onside kick field goal thing. Now, both are really difficult, but I think having the ball in your own one with 13 seconds down a field goal, that's pretty darn impossible.
Well,
that's why you wouldn't want to score.
They are both difficult, but you know what? It could result in a fluky play. If you give them the ball at the one, you never know what could happen.
Because one,
remember, it's still, you know what, I'm focusing more, John, on one possession versus two possession. And the fact that if you're up by six and you give them the ball on the one, or you're up by three, let's say, you know, they still just need one miracle play to get into field goal range or the end zone, and they win that game.
And the other way
versus
you got it
the other way.
Things.
I mean, you're making it so convoluted. You're talking about an onside kick. The ball has to bounce your way. You got to stop the Giants. The two possession situation protects you under all circumstances.
You're right about that. Hey, look, and that's why I said it's very rare where you say scoring a touchdown is a bad thing.
You take it. And that's why Tom Coughlin, we go back to his statement,
that's
John.
Right. And Tom
he says,
after
I wanted that 10-point lead.
Yep.
That's exactly what he said. You can't blame him for that.
201-939-4513. And that's why, by the way, he decided, and in retrospect, it was a mistake because you could have scored running the ball on third down, too. One of the reasons why it was a mistake, passing the ball on third down, which is what Tom said after the game, and I'm just parroting what the coach said after the game. But, of course, once you do pass, as Eli has said already, you have to know to take the sack there and not throw it away. And obviously that, you know, none of this other stuff would have mattered. You know, what Jennings said, if Eli would have just slid down, it probably would have been academic afterwards. It would have been a good learning experience rather than, you know, having all these painful phone calls from Giants fans.
John, before we get back to the phone calls, I mean, what you're alluding to is the narrative of this game changes second to second, play to play.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if Eli Manning converts that pass, nobody's even questioning the play call.
No.
It's genius all of a sudden. Notice that. Well, what a brilliant play. That's what the conversation becomes.
Or, by the way, if the referees decide to throw the flag on Barry Church holding Daniel Fells.
There you go.
Nobody cares about that either.
Well and also, no, but then it becomes, a good play by Eli because he threw it in the vicinity of where it seemed as if there was a penalty.
Of where Daniel Fell was, and he drew the penalty.
Correct. So
you're absolutely right.
To me, this is football. It's just like we overreact after 1 week. We don't know what's going to happen the next 3 weeks. We're already crowning and dismissing teams after one game, and the narrative's going to change 2 or 3 weeks down the road.
Again, if the defense gets the stop.
That's another thing. They held on, but, you know, hey, they kept their
composure. Oh, boy, they got lucky. The mistake didn't cost them, but the defense stepped up, and we got a win. Everybody goes happy, and you're not looking at back pages of the paper and all this stuff for 2 days. So
those little things.
It's just how it goes. One thing, and that's why, you know, these advanced statistics will say, well, if you do this in this situation, you have a 6% chance of winning. But if you field a win for it, you have a 12% chance of winning. It's like not every play is independent of one another. One play affects the next,
domino,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just one of those things that I think is interesting. Back to the phones. Let's go to line one, Dave. Charles is in New Mexico up next. Charles, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi, Charles.
Hey, a couple things. Where was our young defensive end from UCLA?
He was inactive. Odighizuwa did not play. He was inactive.
He was battling a foot injury during the week, Charles, and I guess he worked it out on game day, and they didn't think he was going to be able to go.
Okay, after two sleepless nights, my buddies, we were watching the game, and I was going crazy. All the excuses in the world, we live in the middle of Dallas Cowboy country, and I hate them with a passion more than any team in the world.
Understandable.
You got to run the ball on third and fourth down. I don't care. I agree with what you said. Third and fourth down, you leave, 17 seconds? They're at the one-yard line. There's no way Romo pulls a miracle there. He's got to throw the ball downfield, doesn't have time to stop the clock. We win the game. We're happy. We stole one in Dallas. Now we got Atlanta coming up. Atlanta looked pretty good last night. I mean, if we start 0-2, 0-3, God forbid, lose to the Redskins on a Thursday night, do you think it's about the end of the Tom Coughlin era?
Well, like Lance just said, Charles, I don't think you can, you know, make proclamations after two or three games. I think, you know, we've seen in seasons past with the Giants, now not the last couple years where they started slow, but remember all those years where the Giants, you know, started really well and they were 6-1 in the first seven games and the second half of the season didn't go so well. Things can change in this league pretty fast, so I'm not going to write any obituaries after 3 weeks. I don't think that's fair, but, look, obviously you don't want to start 0-3 based on how these last two seasons went. You want to have a quicker start. And look, next week, you saw a lot of teams this week, I think, win games that people didn't think they were going to win because they were at home in their home opener. They were all jacked up. They played really, really, really well. And now, for all you fans coming out to the game on Monday, there's going to be a great halftime. You're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the 90s season. It's your first home game. Don't let this Dallas hangover affect your enthusiasm. Come out here, be loud, pump up the team. Beat Atlanta, you're 1-1. You get Washington, which, you know, I think is a winnable game. You get San Francisco at home in a couple weeks. You get Buffalo in between where they have a quarterback, you know, issue. Though I thought Tyrod Taylor looked pretty darn good in week
opener.
Number one. And you know what? 3-2, 4-1 hand into that Eagles game, you're still in great shape.
Yeah, let's hope so, and let's hope we see the young kid from UCLA. I don't think we're going to see JPP for the rest of the season. I really don't. That was one of the stupidest moves. And after two sleepless nights, I have to say that was the worst loss ever. I was comatose yesterday. I couldn't sleep for the last two nights just thinking about run the ball, get up by 10, and the game's over. And you know what? It's silent in this town. But now, you know, the Cowboys are going to the Super Bowl again, so I got to hear that for a couple weeks.
Thanks, Charles.
You guys have a great day. Thanks.
Appreciate it. You got it, Charlie.
Well, for those Cowboys fans that want to send their team to the Super Bowl, how about they get Dez Bryant back from a foot injury first?
I think that would help, certainly.
They aren't going anywhere without Dez Bryant on the field for the second half of the season.
It's a significant loss for them.
Oh, absolutely.
And remember, they also lost Randy Gregory. Let's not forget about that, too.
Though,
high ankles.
I've never seen a group of fans and organizations so thrilled that it's one of their players had a high ankle sprain, because there was a lot of conjecture on Sunday night that they thought the young man had torn his Achilles tendon. So, obviously, high ankle sprain, though, can be, you know, 4-6, maybe even 8-week injury, depending on the severity. Much better diagnosis than obviously a potential.
Well, you'd rather get a player back than lose him for the season.
Well, obviously.
If you could weigh both.
Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on, bud?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, Drew.
Historically, it's one of the worst losses. You guys are too young to remember, but Paul and Len from Maryland remember the Pisarcik fumble. And that was worse because that would be – they would have went to the playoffs.
Andrew, there are a million games that are worse. That game's worse. The Flipper Anderson game is worse.
I forgot about that.
The Matt Dodge Eagles game is worse. This is the first game of the season. It's not going to determine your season. It's easy to bounce back from. Look, you can have bad losses. If you play better the next week and play well the rest of the season, people have the tendency to forget about them.
This is a test about the mental fortitude of this team.
Yeah.
If you could bounce back and put this behind you, you know, then it doesn't necessarily become the focal point of the rest of the season.
You're right, 7 minutes of hell, Michael Vick, and
that's right.
Eli,
the Titans game.
You know,
Pac-Man
it is
Jones.
An embarrassment, though, to play, because Eli, like the other caller said, is a veteran. He just signed a multi-million-dollar contract, and for him not to have the smarts just to fall down, he's always known for being an intelligent quarterback. I read he scored historically high in the Wonderlic test. So for him not to have thought that out and just fall down, is kind of shocking, and that's really why it's such a bad, you know, loss. That's why I put it up there.
Yeah, we get it, Andrew.
And also, Eric Flowers and Pugh, they didn't fan out when they had to, you know, on the goal line. They ran right behind Flowers and Pugh, and they couldn't get the job done. So all these multi-million-dollar guys, they flopped at the end. But I have Andrew Senior here, so I'll put him on.
Oh, wow, we got the tag team today.
We got the two for
How
one.
About this?
Andrew Senior,
wow.
What's going on, Pat?
You haven't heard from Andrew Senior.
No, we have not heard.
Now, listen, I have faith in the coach yet. I don't care what they say. Look, he's very meticulous. He works hard. Look what he did for the Giants. Two Super Bowls. Hey, anybody can make a mistake. Look at how many guys get divorced because they married the wrong woman. Huh? Thank you for listening to me. Bye-bye.
Thank you,
Andrew
Senior. Thanks for the
Appreciate
call,
it.
Guys. Good to hear from both of you. We haven't heard from Andrew Senior in a while.
That was a smooth transition, by the way. I'm impressed with how smoothly one phone is handed to the other.
Well, you could tell that they've worked on that in the offseason.
Apparently,
last year, they
had drills.
Last year, there was some rough Andrew-to-Andrew call transitions.
Static in between.
Fumbled hands off.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of trouble, but that was very,
they've
very
worked
slick.
On it. They have honed their craft in the offseason.
Absolutely.
That training has paid off.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Will in the Bronx. He's up next. Will, how are you?
Hey, John. How you doing, Lance?
Hi, Will.
Doing well. How's everything, Will?
All right. You know, this wasn't my first thought because I was pissed off just like the rest of Big Blue Nation Sunday night. But, you know, first game, just thank God for 15 more games, right?
Hey, you got it.
My comment is that we don't really need to panic because, like caller said a little earlier, if we lost that game in Dallas and a lot of people didn't expect us to win it, just think if we split the division, we win our home games, we lose the away games, we still got 10 more games to win, and most of those are conference games. So we don't need to really panic because all we need to do is just win our home games and grab a couple of other division non-division conference games, and we should be fine.
Will, you're absolutely right, and I want to go back to last year, and I want to make a comparison here for Giant fans. What did everybody think the Dallas Cowboys were going to do last season, Will? Everyone thought they're going to be pretty bad, right?
Yep.
And the first game of the season, they go out at home, They play the San Francisco 49ers.
Turnover
they
city.
Turn it over four times. They lose in awful fashion. And everyone thinks the sky is falling. Jason Garrett's getting fired. The season's over. What happens? They bounce back and they go 12-4. So trust me, there's a lot of room here for the Giants to bounce back and still have a good season.
Yeah, as bad as this taste is, there's no need to panic. We are in good shape.
No doubt, Will. Appreciate the optimism.
Nobody should be panicking after one game. Way too early.
Thank you, Will.
You're welcome. Thanks.
All right, take it easy. I want to get some business in before we get to a couple more calls. Remember, DraftKings is the presenting sponsor of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. Now, Jeff Fiegels picked his players on Friday, and here's the beauty of this. We can recap this with Fiegels not being here.
Oh, really?
We can just
destroy
him. It's
going to
be great. Week one is in the books, and unfortunately, Jeff is not walking away with the big money. However, some of his picks did okay and hopefully did help you out a little bit. If you weren't here last week, here's a quick recap of what Jeff suggested. For quarterbacks, he went with Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill played well from a football perspective, 22 for 34, 226 yards, but only one touchdown. Redskins fell to the Miami Dolphins in that game, but Tannehill only scored 12.74 fantasy points, but they hope you can get more from him in future weeks. His running back was Chris Ivory. Now, Chris Ivory was Jeff Fiegel's best pick last week. He had 20 carries, 91 yards, two touchdowns. He was also the third best running back in the entire league and helped Fiegel's team by putting up 23 fantasy points. And it's funny, what I've seen in the real quick glance, not a lot of running backs getting 20-plus carries anymore. I think only four running backs in the whole league got 20 carries in the NFL this week.
Well, I think a lot of it is also how the game plays out, too.
True.
If your team is down, you're not necessarily going to get a guy that's going to get 25 carries.
Yeah,
for example, DeMarco Murray last night, what, he got 9 carries in
that
game.
Yeah, but how many did Ryan Matthews get? I mean, and Sproles. I mean, they probably had 25 carries as a team.
Ryan Matthews, I think, only had 3, and Sproles
really
had very
three?
Few.
Yeah, Ryan Matthews had a few catches,
they
though,
did
right?
Not, they had catches, but I'll look it up. The numbers on the ground were not that impressive for the Eagles last
I'd be
time.
Curious to look at the snap counts. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Jeff's wide receiver was Demaryius Thomas. Now, Thomas and Peyton Manning were not able to find the end zone. And by the way, this is something like the third out of the last 5 games Peyton Manning has played in where he has not thrown a touchdown pass. And prior to that, I think he had thrown a touchdown in 51 consecutive regular season games.
Flacco didn't throw a touchdown pass either in that game.
That's a good one.
Defensive battle.
So they were not able to find the end zone, but they did give him 13 fantasy points because Demaryius Thomas did 7 catches for 60 yards. And that was Fiegel's DraftKings lineup for week number 1. To draft your own lineup, go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. So Fiegel's will have to step it up here.
So he was one of three, essentially, in terms of pats on the back.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, Chris Ivory was a solid.
So right now he's one negative back pat.
Like all that? Right, if you want to word it like that.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Boy, you're making things so convoluted and complex today. Can't just make it simple. By the way, the Eagles had 16 carries last
That's
time.
It, huh?
That was it.
Wow.
And Matthews had 3, Murray 8, Sproles 5.
And Sproles had 7 catches, Matthews 3, and DeMarco Murray had 4.
4.
So they did get involved in the passing game. But I was surprised the Eagles didn't run the ball more last night. I thought they would, especially against the Falcons' run defense that wasn't exactly standout last
year. Well, I think part of it is also, remember, they trailed by 17 at one point. So
yeah, that's a good point.
That changes probably the game plan. I'm sure they went in thinking they were going to run more. You paid DeMarco Murray that money to have him be your workhorse.
Speaking of which, were you surprised he did not get the ball on 3rd and 4th and 1 at the end of that game when they're trying to convert on that final drive?
A little surprised. Like I said,
I know Matthews,
in that guy.
I know Matthews ran in from the goal line on the previous drive, but I thought we'd see Murray there to try to get those extra couple yards in that crunch time spot.
Well, I would be the first person to say that Murray should be priority number one.
I mean, he was
in terms of trying to pick up the yards.
He was short yardage last year.
But it just goes to show you, and I think this is probably one of the most troubling aspects of the Eagles, not to get completely off topic, their offensive line. You know, has room for improvement.
And Jason Peters was banged up yesterday, too. I think it was an ankle. But, you know,
but
you
that
Peters,
line is a whole struggle.
Well, Peters, Kelsey, and their right tackle, I'm trying to think of the damn Lane Johnson. Those three very
well,
good
and
players.
Bobber's back, too, who was hurt last
season.
One of
the guards, correct.
But keep in mind, it wasn't so much just running the ball. Pass protection was an issue yesterday, too. They got to Bradford.
Well, Brian Schofield came over with Quinn from Seattle.
Former Seahawk.
Yeah. All right, we got 15 minutes. I got 2 callers up. That means we have a couple open lines if you guys want to get in and join us at 201-939-4513. Steve in Washington, D.C. is up next. Steve-o!
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I need about 45 seconds.
Go ahead, man.
First,
you got it.
I'm going to go ahead. You know, I don't want to pile on. You know, I mean, just hearing other guys, you know, everybody else, all of the fans' pain. I know that, you know, I'm not, you know, the only one with a pain, but I'm going to tell you right now, it's catastrophic, it's unforgivable, it's a lot of things. You can never downplay enough to me, oh, yeah, we got 15 games, but after the last four seasons we had, and this being a division game and really can set, you know, the whole pace for the rest of the season, this is catastrophic, period. You know, of course we have no choice but to move on, but I'm telling you right now, when this, you know, affects us, I expect the management to act accordingly. This could probably, you know, send Tom Coughlin packing at the end of the day, and rightfully so. I'm not one of those people who advocate that, but this could be the one. This could be it. And I just want to say this. If they were really, first of all, there's no excuse. It was poor time management the entire series. Okay, I don't, you know, 72. I don't want to hear anything about, oh, he's worried about giving them back the ball. Because if he was thinking about the clock, he would have never made the mistakes he made going in, you know, once we were down in the zone. Why we didn't, you know, run it in, and why Williams wasn't on the goal line is just inexcusable. Williams should have been the goal line, you know, rusher. We should have rushed the ball. We should have scored. They would have had less than 30 seconds to score 10 points. That's it.
Well, but Steve, Jennings has been used within goal line packages before. It's not as if they just threw him into the mix for the first time. And their most productive drive of the preseason, yes, I know it's the preseason, but it was with the starters against the starters for the Jets defense. Jennings was the guy in the goal line series, and he scored a touchdown from a yard out. So, I mean, yeah, I don't really think that was so surprising.
I don't really have a problem with the fact that it was Jennings, but if you tell Jennings and probably the offensive lineman not to score, you know, when we got... they're on the one-yard line. Worst-case scenario, we don't score 3 points on the one-yard line. Give me a break. Give these defensive players a break who busted their butt the entire time. There's no excuses. There's none. That's why everybody's so mad. I'm ready to move on for it. But to me, there's no sugarcoating it at all. There's no excuse. There was no logic. Apparently, they didn't even realize there was a clock in the game because they wouldn't have made that mistake. So I'm just going to leave that alone. Other thing I want to say that really got me ticked off, and I want to know if you guys can tell me how much of this is true, because I'm hearing that JPP not only had his one hand amputated and he had a skin graft just about a week ago, but partially one of his other fingers was missing. This dude's going to show up thinking he's going to sign our tender? No, let me tell you, John, for the record, some fans, including myself, there's no way. He can't do enough. I want him out of here. Out of here. This is my team. Like it is everybody else's fan. It's personal.
Boy, is he ever.
It's personal for me. What he did, the way he tried to hide, the way he tried to bamboozle us, but wake up in the signing this new franchise thing, not even exposing that he was missing another finger, he can't do nothing for me. Hey, guys, I appreciate y'all letting me vent.
All right, Steve.
Fair enough.
All right, Steve. Be safe,
baby.
All
right, Steve. Be careful. Don't take out the aggression on anybody in the vicinity. I'd be concerned about their well-being.
Those reports came out on Sunday morning. I think Jay Glazer had one of those reports. Obviously, you know, I haven't seen the hand. The Giants haven't commented on exactly the nature of the injury, so who knows if those reports are correct or not. But the bottom line, whatever the damage to the hand might be, it's significant enough where he's not ready to play. So that's really, in the end, all that matters. Whether, you know, it's if he was ready to play and he had no fingers, people would be fine with it. The fact of the matter is he's not ready to play. So until he gets ready to play, we're in a holding pattern.
And the focus still has to be on all the players on the roster right now who are going to go out there. There's a few questions here on Twitter, John, before we maybe get back to the phone calls. Or you want to squeeze in the call?
I'd like to do one more call, and then if we get anybody else, we'll get them in. Then we have a million people chiming in on Twitter, and we will wrap up the show with that. The football's almost moving.
I was going to say, it's got a mind of its own. See?
Yeah. For some reason,
what happened to the holder? Yeah.
The T disappeared over the weekend, and Dave went for a hard target search trying to find the T, and he couldn't come up with it. So I tried to wedge it between the helmets. It was actually in place for most of the show.
You did a decent job, but clearly not effective enough.
Well, I think your computer hit the helmet and that de-wedged the ball.
Well, perhaps that's the excuse. But
that's my excuse.
I want to know how that thing got legs, got up, and took flight around the facility.
Well, obviously,
somebody
picked it up and moved it.
Well, apparently.
Neither does have any security
cameras.
We'll
have to set up a full investigation.
Let's go to Chris in New Jersey. Chris, you're up next, and you're going to wrap us up on the phones today. What's going on?
Oh, awesome,
pal?
Awesome. Thanks, John. Thanks, Lance. You know what? The therapeutic thoughts that I've been having the last couple of days, the one thing I take solace in the past couple of days is the trade-off, and the trade-off being 2007, R.W. McCord is batting down that pass in the end zone. That would have been 10 times worse than this opening game. As painful as this is, thank God he batted that ball down in the end zone, because that would have been forever. up there with the Flipper Anderson game, the San Francisco 2002 debacle. So if we got to take anything away from this, if it had to be a game, thankfully it was the opening game, not that playoff game where we led at the end there and we almost lost.
Hey, Chris, and you know what? I guarantee you every Cowboy fan on the planet would trade that win on Sunday night for that win in that 2007 playoff game. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, thanks, man. No doubt. And then and I can't go over the game anymore with everybody that I've been talking to. I'm done. I'm turned the page. We've said it. We've beaten it up already, and it's only Tuesday. The only thing I want to say is that on Sunday, the Giants will show themselves. Either they're going to roll over, and we're going to let this affect us or let them affect us Sunday, or they're going to come out high intensity, motivated, momentum, you know, to the line, let's score points, and let's try and win this game. Hopefully they win this game 27-10, 30-10, 24-3. Let's just make a statement and just knock them in the mouth this Sunday.
Well, that's the best way to respond. I would agree with you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
You use the heartbreak and you translate that into productivity come Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons, a team that did look impressive against the Philadelphia Eagles, but a team that has just as many question marks as a number of other teams that are transitioning to a new scheme, a new head coach. They look good early in the first half, the Falcons, but as the game progressed, I think the Eagles' offense started to solve that Atlanta defense,
yep,
and they were able to move the ball efficiently down the
field. All right, let's rotate here. We can go one tweet each, and we'll go through them. We got 8 minutes, so we should get to a lot of them, but I think I've seen more than 100 pop up on Giants.
There's been a lot.
Yeah, during,
a lot of activity
during Giants chat. So here we go. First, at ColeWiss88, Big Dash 0788. We are currently ranked 30th in total defense, 31st in passing, 11th in rushing, not acceptable. Now, luckily, you got those takeaways in that game, which I think, you know, helped some of the yards you gave up. You held the Cowboys to 2 field goals in the first half in the red zone, which certainly helped. But I think he's correct in that as you move forward here, you're going to have to get teams off the field a little bit quicker. Especially considering you look at the time possession in that first half. The Cowboys held the ball for about 20 minutes. The Giants, I think, for less than 10. I think it was 21-9 or something in
it
that
was, I think, about a 15-minute differential. I think it was like 22-7, if memory serves me correct.
That sounds right, too.
Yeah.
Whatever the case might be, you got to get guys off the field a little bit quicker. So absolutely right, and you hope as his defense, which is young and still figuring things out, maybe John Beeson gets back this week. We'll see with the knee. You hope that gets a little bit better.
Perfect segue. Speaking of injuries, J-Rock at J-Rock underscore NYG asks, what's the injury status on Eric Flowers' ankle? Tom Coughlin did address that on yesterday's conference call. He mentioned that Flowers is undergoing further testing. The positive is he got through the entire game, so the fact that he was able to battle through the entire game should hopefully indicate that it's not perhaps serious, but they're going to wait for, obviously, the testing to come in. We'll probably know more tomorrow when Tom Coughlin addresses the media before they get out for practice and start focusing on the Atlanta Falcons, but I would say the fact that he got through the game, John, is a positive with respect to Eric Flowers.
Yeah, absolutely, and he's a tough kid. He's going to try to play through injuries. So even I imagine he'll play, but that is something you certainly have to watch, because if he can't go for whatever reason, that means Pugh, I would imagine, would have
tackle
to move.
I would think
would move to left tackle, because right now John Jerry's officially in the depth chart, I think, behind left tackle, but he's not going to play left tackle.
I would think,
it's going to be
there.
Pugh out there, and then you probably have Schwartz with Dallas Reynolds at left guard, maybe? Or do you have Schwartz go to the left side? Could you put Jerry at left guard? That's why it gets very shaky. Bottom line, that's why it's very important for Eric
Flowers. We're speculating too much at this point.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of support for Steve on Twitter here. Even Mike Farmers agrees with him, even though he's
Farmer
a Gator.
Agrees with everybody.
No, he does. He's never with us.
Well, but everybody on Giants.
Ben Gruen. So. I think Steve may be the only guy who could take JPP in a fight. The guy's a mountain. Charlie Murphy. I like it. Everyone else is giving Steve some love. And you know what? Guys, I hope it didn't come off that way. We weren't trying to sugarcoat anything off the top. It's a bad loss. We get that. And Tom Coughlin, Eli, no. Trust me. Nobody's beating themselves up more yesterday and today than those two guys about that loss. And, frankly, everyone else that was involved in that game that made a mistake that contributed to that loss. Everyone in the building knew how important this game was, and they wanted to win it. And it's disappointing that they didn't. But again, you got 15 more to go. You got a game in 5 days. You got to move on.
Well, and that gets back to the point about putting things in perspective. I would agree. It's not about sugarcoating. It's not trying to analyze it time and time again. It's just to put things in perspective. As fan base, as commentators, we tend to overreact,
yeah,
especially early in the season when there's a game of this much importance because, yes, it is within the division. But, you know, a game like this, if it occurs in week 7, let's say, John, and you already have had 5 or 6 wins under your belt, obviously it's easier to put things in perspective. I understand it's tough to do that since there's only one game under your belt at this point, but it's still very early. I think there's a lot of football to go before we really get a true feel of what this team is made of.
All right, let's go one more. James Siegel, why do we keep Preston Parker instead of keeping James Jones? Everyone was a little annoyed. They saw James Jones have the 4 catches, 2 for touchdowns. Preston Parker did not have his best game over the weekend. He had 3 drops, 1 on a diving play, which is tough. The other 2 he should have had, and all 3 were in Cowboys territory, could have been first downs, gotten the Giants in the scoring territory. I think the reason he kept Parker instead of Jones was twofold. 1, special teams coverage. 2, special teams return. He could do both of those. And then 3, Jones not a slot guy. And I think since Cruz was banged up, they thought Preston Parker could and would, and that's what he did, step in for Cruz in the slot.
Well, the other thing that I was going to throw out here, and this is just pure me thinking maybe a little too much and overthinking and speculation, but, you know, with the Stevie Brown conversation, John, what Tom Coughlin brought up was concern about not picking up the system quick enough. And I understand James Jones has a connection to Ben McAdoo, but remember, McAdoo was not the offensive coordinator in Green Bay.
That's true.
So it was a little different. Do you think perhaps that may have played a role in terms of the decision-making? And the only reason I bring that up is, you know, Parker was used a lot in Ben McAdoo's scheme last season. So there was a tremendous amount of familiarity in terms of him filling in for injured wide receivers, knowing the routes and so forth. That may have been another part of this equation, part of this conversation in terms of when they determine who's going to make the team and who's not.
Dave in Rochester, where is that tang-induced giant forehead having Dottino today, a.k.a. Tantino?
Boy, everybody's so creative.
I got to imagine after the last couple of days, not that Paul sleeps anyway, but he can't power walk on the plane, which I think gives him a little bit of an issue.
Does he sleep on the plane, by the way?
No.
He actually stays, even with the delay, he did not get any
sleep. Why do you think I joke that the worst seat on the team plane is next to Paul Dottino? That's why.
So what is he doing? He's basically reliving the game through his head.
He'll listen to music sometimes. He'll go through the play-by-play.
Oh, God.
But I imagine Paul went to Superman at the Fortress of Solitude, had like the little capsule that he would go into like recharge. I imagine that's what Paul does on Tuesdays. He has his Tantino capsule. It goes in. It gives him some energy. It rejuvenates him. It redoes his tan a little bit.
He comes back out on Wednesday,
ready for Coach's presser show, and he's ready to go.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably part of the process.
All right, what else you got here? You got some more tweets for me, Lance?
I'm looking through here. I got so caught up in Paul Dottino that I got distracted.
Barb loves the G-Man at Bab1104. Dez out for a long time. Bradford already having some ankle x-rays. The NFC East is still very vulnerable. Look, the bottom line is that you can still make a run in the division even after 1 game.
Still early. You got a lot of divisional games left. And, you know, I understand people are saying we don't want to compare it to previous seasons. Nobody's saying to do that. Look at this season all by itself. There's still 15 games on the schedule. So a lot of football still to be played. Who knows how the opponents are going to play out in terms of injuries and so forth. Remember, the Cowboys lost Dez Bryant and Randy Gregory. Who knows what that means for that team moving forward, too? You know, it's still very early. Are the Eagles going to regroup after having a very shaky performance?
Remember, it's not like you lost those guys after you got Hardy and McClain back either. You're still missing Hardy and McClain on your suspensions, then those 2 guys on top of it.
So it's starting to pile in terms of the voids that they have to fill.
At DRicker81, we're going to have to give DRC and Prince some help to deal with Julio Jones. Going to be hard to outscore the Falcons. And we saw what Julio – and by the way, you think the Eagles have a little buyer's remorse on Byron Maxwell after last night? It's only 1 game, I get it, but boy
–
it was not pretty.
It was not pretty. It actually it brought back memories, essentially, of what they dealt with, John, late last season with Bradley Fletcher and Kerry Williams. Because that was what Dez Bryant and DeSean Jackson did to those 2 guys.
And by the way,
it was basically deja vu all over again.
Speaking of injuries, DeSean Jackson, hamstring.
He's out 3 to 4 weeks.
He's probably not going to be back for that Giants.
No, he'll definitely miss it. They said 3 to 4 weeks, so you could cancel him out. That is one less guy that they're going to have to contend with the Giants secondary.
No question about it. What else do we got here? Well, you're really coming up short on getting these tweets.
No, well, I mean, I'll throw out a few here. A lot of them are sometimes they're just statements here. They're not necessarily questions.
Well, that's fine. We can comment on statements.
Well, I think Stu here at Big Blue Stu 42 sums it up. You know, you can't win games when you settle for field goals. And that gets back to one of the prevalent storylines out of this contest, 1 for 4 in the red zone. In addition to some of the defensive shortcomings, if you turn some of those field goals into touchdowns, you know, then it doesn't really get into a position where maybe you're rethinking the play clock and you're rethinking the game clock. So that obviously changes the narrative of the contest as well. And you can't overlook that storyline. 1 for 4 in the red zone, you can't settle for 3 points. You need to walk away with 7 points. That's a given, especially when your defense gives you touchdowns on top of that. There's no reason why the offense can't meet you halfway.
All right, a couple points that a few different people made at Tag Rocket. At Toby Gleish, at Gruen Ben, disappointed that the team lost despite the fact that the Giants won the turnover battle 3-0, didn't really commit a ton of penalties. They played a clean game but still lost. I think that's a fair point. I went over this a little bit. Last year, when a team was plus 3 or better in turnovers, they were 43-1. Road teams 22-0.
Well, even look at Giants history. The last time the Giants lost a game, John, where I believe they won the turnover battle and they also played clean football, Baltimore, back in 2012. So it's been a long time. The Giants usually, when they are plus in turnover differential, they play clean football, well-disciplined football. You pretty much can pen in a W. It's unheard of that you suffer a loss under those circumstances.
All right, let's get ready for the Falcons. Tomorrow, Giants press conference live comes away at 11 o'clock, starting off with Tom Coughlin's press conference on Giants.com and on MSG. Then Big Blue Kickoff Live follows that. Anita Marks and David deal with you taking your calls. I'm sure there'll be more recap of the game Sunday night, but let's start looking ahead to Atlanta on Thursday, DeTino and Cross, and then Jeff Fiegels and I back on Friday. Big Blue Kickoff at noon all week on Giants.com. And, of course, Giants Rewind is this afternoon on MSG. I believe it debuts at 5 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. You can check that out. Check your local listings on MSG Networks as Bob Pop and Carl Banks give you one last look at the game on Sunday night if you're interested. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Great job on the calls. Great job on Twitter. Thanks for being a part of the show. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Touchdown, Giants!